sinless as a baby. Chapter 2. Is it really all that important? Is truth or error important? Many informed Seventh-day Adventists know we've had a decided polarizing of views for the better part of half a century. Indeed, the problem goes back as far as a century, for the 1888 messengers, Jones and Wagoner, were emphatic in understanding that Christ took our fallen, sinful nature, yet lived therein a perfectly sinless life, and was totally sinless. Their view was opposed at the time, and still is. Some today say they like the general emphasis, in their most precious message, but insist they were in error on this point. Other conscientious writers struggle to come up with a harmony of the two opposite views. At the Palmdale Conference of early 1976 it became apparent that it was impossible to bridge them, so the General Conference declared both acceptable. But neither side have been happy to back away. Those who hold that Christ had a sinless nature keep wondering if there is some potential blasphemy lurking in the post-fall idea. Does it disqualify Christ from being our sinless substitute, so that we must end up not having a Savior? This is the implied suggestion of several recent Adventist writers. Could Jesus have had the very same nature that we receive from sinful Adam and still be our Savior? Could Jesus save babies born with the inheritance of selfishness wrought in their very being, if he had been born with the same inheritance of selfishness? Could Jesus have a nature just like ours and still be our interceding advocate and high priest? Could Jesus intercede for us if his human nature was also defiled and corrupt? If he were altogether like us, 100%, if he had shared in exactly the same way the inheritance of sin and guilt we all received from Adam, then he would have been crippled as a savior. But more than that, he would himself have stood in need of a redeemer. How can one say that Christ took human nature after 4,000 years of degeneration and yet remained uninfected by this malady, this cancer, this virus that has certainly infected all of us? Both of these authors apparently misconstrue the 1888 view which they oppose, but we will not take time here to discuss the distortions. Adams answers his own rhetorical question a few pages later with reasoning that has to closely resemble the Roman Catholic view, before his birth Christ bypass, ed, this universal infection of sin, and was accepted from our inherited legacy. It was like a freeway bypass that saves you going through town. He believes Ellen White agrees with him when she says that Christ, coming to dwell in humanity, receives no pollution. The question is, what does receives mean? Does it bypass the exercise of his own human will? Her statement hardly helps solve the sinless as a baby problem, for she is not speaking of a genetically inherited exception or exemption for Christ that bypassed his own human will and gave him sinless flesh, but how the great physician as an adult touched the lepers and received no defilement. The meaning seems clear. Coming to dwell in humanity, Christ never sinned. He couldn't come to dwell in humanity if he avoided identity with humanity where humanity is. Those who believe the 1888 view see that to accept Christ genetically from having to meet the problem of sin in a nature or flesh like ours logically compromises his victory over Satan. Jesus cannot be excused from our battle as we must fight it. The 1888 view sees an antinomianism lurking in the pre-fall view that is contrary to the gospel. If the Savior can't overcome or condemn sin, if he takes our fallen sinful spiritual nature, how can we ever hope to overcome? The bottom line? We can't follow the logic through all the way, and it becomes serious. Jones and Wagoner both recognize that this view is at least next door to the Roman Catholic view, if not logically identical. They saw Christ as a baby partaking of the same genetic inheritance that all the sons and daughters of both David and Abraham have had to take, all the way from Adam. The word seed is sperm in Greek. But that doesn't mean that he had to be a sinner like we are. And the good news, they said, is that we with our fallen, sinful heredity can overcome by faith in him, even as he overcame. They saw it as good news that makes good sense when you think about getting ready for the second coming of Christ. When discussions take place, as they inevitably do, the question always comes up. If that's true, how could Christ be sinless as a baby before he reached the age of accountability? His holiness as an infant is the problem. It must have been natural, non-volitional, exempt from our genetic inheritance that does program our babies, and all of us, to selfishness and temper tantrums and all kinds of sin. Is there an answer that Roman Catholicism and our Protestant friends haven't thought of? If we find it, surely it must be good news. The 1888 message points toward an answer.